Birth, the Grand Division, Chapter 12. "What changed?" asked Rhino as he leaned over Lisa's shoulder. "What do you mean?" she asked. "This is a method of problem solving. It's sort of like applying a math function to thought," said Rhino. "You look at a series of data in time, in the order it was received. Record it in such a way that you can see the trend of the data, like temperature over a period of time, or in our case, the intensity of earthquakes over a period of months. Connect the dots with a line this way," he said, placing his enormous hand over the mouse and clicking the option for a trend line on the screen. "And then we can see when the change occurred." "Oh, I see," she said with renewed enthusiasm. "That's only part of it. Now that you can see when the change occurred, and by how much, we need to make good guesses as to why that change occurred, and then gather data to prove or disprove that guess. Simple, right?" asked Rhino. "It's sort of like when my mom asked me 20 questions about what I've been doing all day," said Lisa. "Well, you're smart enough that you provide only data that allows her to draw a conclusion that you want her to draw, though. In science, that doesn't work. Well, it happens all the time, but that's because of cognitive dissonance," he said, standing up to his full 6'9". "Cog what?" she asked. "It means that if a person is faced with evidence that conflicts with their belief system, they reject the evidence," he said from memory. "Ha, like my boyfriend," she said. "Boyfriend? Well, he's probably a dweeb if he's that way. I recommend you dump him," he said. "That's what my mom says," she said, laughing and looking over her shoulder at him. "Yeah, well, you see, science is good for you," he said, blushing through his light brown cheeks. "I think I'm starting to like science better than my other classes," she said. "In the immortal words of Rod Stewart, you wear it well," he said. "Oh, yeah, my mom listens to him. That's, never a dull moment, right?" she asked. "Yeah. But I'm not that old, Lisa. I just like Rod Stewart. Saw him in concert a couple years ago," he said, looking down. His blush turned into a bump in his heartbeat as he realized he was flirting. He loved his pathway with Caltech, but he felt drawn like a riptide out to sea. She turned back around to the screen and began clicking through the files to import the U.S. Geological Survey earthquake data into her version of Rhino's model. It was time-consuming, and it was easy to fall into a routine. She learned early in the semester that this led to inaccurate conclusions, as breakthrough discoveries often came by paying close attention to the data. She didn't have a 4.0 GPA because she studied hard. She had a way of knowing the concept very early in the learning process. Once she glimpsed the concept, she tugged hard at the reins and showed a remarkable ability to rush ahead of the instructor. Rhino could see that she was chomping through more than 500,000 data points at a very good rate. He was excited for the project, because this was the first time that earthquake energy had been treated to produce a sort of CAT scan of the planet. Very few people had access to this raw data, and even fewer attempted to use the receiving stations as a subterranean telescope to see back to the source of the quake. This canceled out the shadow wave that had been created to explain away the data that showed up when looking at that information from the source to the listening station. "Talk about cognitive dissonance," he said to himself. His hypothesis was to prove that planetary core geology was based upon a molten ball floating through space. Of course, if he couldn't prove it with this data, then the opposite might very well be true. That, he reasoned, could change everything. He walked across the department lobby and up to Professor Loretta Wesson's office door, which was open. He knocked lightly on the frame, and she looked up at him and smiled. "Rhino, how are you today?" "Fine, Doc," he said. "Lisa is crunching the latest data dump." "I'm starting to get pumped," he said. "You got lucky in getting her," she said. "She compliments your team very well. If you keep going at this pace, I see you publishing this semester," she said. He smiled broadly. Publishing a major geological paper with heavy geophysical data would be epic at the World Conference. It was a very slow-moving science, so when breakthroughs occur, they often form Nobel teams. He ducked his head under the doorframe and stepped into her office. "Can I?" he asked, placing his hand on the door that otherwise stayed open if she was there. "Sure. Have a seat," she said, leaning back in her chair, making sure her body language was open and accepting. "Thanks," he said quietly, as he gently closed the door for privacy. "Doc, I'm 26 years old. The world..." he said, losing his voice momentarily. "Hey, relax, big guy. We've been through a lot, and we have seen and done things no one ever will. You're in the right place, and I probably wouldn't be if it wasn't for you. Okay?" she said, placing her elbows on the desk and looking at him with a smile. "Yeah," he said, letting out a huge exhale. He took another breath. "I just was wondering if this is all worth it, you know?" he said quietly. "Rhino, I think if the world knew everything you and I know, or at least suspect, I think they might wonder the same thing. Hey, why should I go to work, or why should I stay married?" they might say. "I'm going to party like it's the end of the world, you know?" she asked. "Yeah. Well, it's not like that. I mean..." he paused. "I'm sorry, I put words in your mouth. What do you want to say?" she asked with her hands palm up on the table. She often wrestled with the metaphor that was Rhino. "I think I love science, but showing it would end my career. But there's not much time. I just want to know if I'm going to live long enough to..." he took another deep breath. "Love someone." "My God, Rhino, I'm so sorry. I never thought about it. Is it Lisa?" "Yeah, Doc. She lights me up like a scoreboard," he said with a smile on his face. "It's against... shit. University protocols." "How old is she?" she asked. "She's 21. She won't graduate for a year and a half, Doc. She won't..." he paused again, trying to regain his composure. "She's gonna find out anyway. She's very smart, and she will see it in the data. She might run," he said, folding his powerful fingers together on his lap. "She's an adult, Rhino. She's a consenting adult, but you can't..." "I know, I know. Let my affection for her influence her grade. Doc, she has a 1-hour senior study program with me. What difference could it make?" "I see that you've really thought about this. Look, I can't approve it, but I'm not going to forbid it. That stupid Board of Regents is going to have bigger fish to fry if your null hypothesis proves out anyway," she said. "Was there something else?" she asked with a smile on her face. "No, Doc. You demand, Doc. I mean..." and he stood up to his full 6'9" and smiled. "Thank you." "Leave the door open," she said. "You got it. Thanks, Doc. I mean, Professor," he said, backing out of her office. Loretta rocked back in her chair and inhaled deeply through her nose, held it for a few seconds, and let it out through her pursed lips to fully absorb what had just happened. Love. It was such an enormously powerful emotion. Hell, it was more than that. She'd never experienced it herself. She was always married to her work, driven by her fringe theory of the union of the polarity. Like a man could even understand that, she said to herself. She had her life. She had a home, a new car, and finally her place as full professor with tenure at one of the most prestigious science universities in the world. In all this, she had seen her friends broken and shattered by relationships. "They got lost on the way to life," she used to say to her dad, who constantly bugged his only daughter about meeting a man. "I'll get a pet, Dad," she would say as she headed out the door with a large book bag weighed down with lab work, reference books, and a laptop. "Men are messy, and they smell." She had enjoyed being at the helm of her own ship. She liked the horizon, endless and bleak to the untrained eye. but she could see beyond that horizon to the next one. The drive to discover how the planet was built smashed through her like an avalanche after a childhood experience in a massive earthquake in Southern California. Everyone else was afraid, but she was exhilarated and curious to know what made all that racket under her feet. She spun her chair slightly away from the desk and rocked it back, staring at the drop ceiling tiles. She used to try to look for patterns like faces or animals in the tiles when she was racking her brain about why the data did not match the Geological Society's published position. Now, her union of the polarity was the most important point of focus in the world. In the next few weeks, Rhino's data treatment model would be complete, and they could turn the USGS network into a live view of the inside of the planet. Not only would the world know what was happening to their little blue orb in space, but they would know almost to the hour how long they had until... Jesus H. Christ, she said out loud. Her phone vibrated suddenly on her desk. It was close to 8 o'clock. Again. Hey, Bet, what's up? Mike and I are going to be in Pasadena tonight. We were wondering if you'd like to go with us to the hospital, you know? Trailed Bet. Hospital? What's wrong? She said, dragging her left hand back through her hair after rubbing her forehead. I thought you might not have heard. Shelley's been in a bad accident, said Bet. Oh, dear God, where is she? Asked Loretta. Don't freak out. Mike thinks there's foul play, said Bet. What? Said Loretta, jerking forward in her chair and putting her feet flat on the floor. We don't know for sure. Not yet. We have a little computer work to do. How about 9? Asked Bet. Sure, 9 is fine. Where? We'll call you. We haven't figured out that far ahead. See you then, said Bet. That was Bet. She was never really a schedule type of person, but the girl could find ancient texts with historical data that was damn near quantitative. She correlated Plato's writings with the modern observation that an exploded sun in the triangle of space inside Vega, Sirius, and Alpha Centauri was sucked away in a black hole. Modern instruments did not detect anything like that until years after Bet had published her theory at the age of 20. She was one of the best students Loretta ever had. She had a way of getting into places other scientists pass over. And then that masculine energy would enable her to pound it through to a successful hypothesis. Such a grown-up tomboy. Meeting Agent Michael Smith was the best thing that ever happened to her. Now, she had a release for all that female energy she kept repressed since she was a freshman in college. Damn, she said quietly. Shelley was hurt. She wondered what could have happened. It was at times like this that she felt like she lived on another world. These walls. The university was her ship, and she walked the deck from bow to bulwark with an occasional climb to the crow's nest. But this was her world. Geology moves slowly for a science. Sediments and tectonic plates and geomagnetic storms all made tiny incremental progress. But it took lifetimes to really gain any perspective at all. But she had studied from other lifetimes and stitched them together to provide a pretty good theory of how planets are made as hollow spheres, rather than solid or molten balls. It's just that while straining at a gnat, she sometimes swallowed a camel when ordinary life interferes. There were people on this planet, too. And it seemed like there were millions of bad ones, trying to do bad things, as hard and unceasingly as she was trying to discover good things. Well, the finish line is just around the next curve, people, she said to her desktop as she considered closing down her laptop and going home.